Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, the final results of our Clock Your Sleep competition. Which rival group of you was able to increase your average sleep time the most? Those who followed a regular routine, or turned off screens an hour before bed, or cut out substances like caffeine and alcohol 4 hours before bed? We'll find out and hear some of your experiences. Also today, the new New York City Sanitation Commissioner, Catherine Garcia, on urban composting and more. When you're the sanitation commissioner in a de Blasio administration, is there a progressive way to take out the garbage? Plus, Baron Lerner today on being a second-generation doctor in a time of upheaval in bioethics. And cyber culture maven Doug Rushkoff today on building media consciousness in the emerging generation. And he's now on the Queens College faculty. Maybe you saw Rushkoff's recent PBS documentary, Generation Like. But first, we'll talk politics and more with Melissa Harris-Perry, Wake Forest professor now and host of Melissa Harris-Perry Weekend Mornings on MSNBC. Melissa, thanks for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Absolutely. It's been too long. I'm happy to be here.
And I really want to talk about the Santa Barbara shooting spree the other day, the revenge against women rants the shooter posted beforehand, and the rise over the weekend, which I know you covered on your show, of the hashtag YesAllWomen on Twitter as a public response. Have you been reading the YesAllWomen tweets or sending any yourself?
I have not sent any myself. I have been reading them pretty carefully. When we were first reporting this weekend, the story was still quite new, and we were still getting details, still trying to understand what had occurred, and even, you know, even just hours before the show, making sure that the suspect's name was a public matter, all of that. So we weren't quite ready to go to the place that we now can on Tuesday, which is to talk about how the public is responding to it. And it is stunning to watch the truly global response, I think, less to the shooting. Certainly part of it is about the shooting. Certainly part of it is about the tragedy of the men and women who were killed by this assailant. But an awful lot of it is using this as an opportunity to talk about the sense of fear, the possibility of violence that is so much a part of the kind of daily vulnerability that women live with around the world.
And one of the main themes that I've seen reading the tweets has been kind of pushback against the sense of male entitlement to have women pay attention to them, which was one of the assailant's issues. Do you see that as central as well?
It certainly has been central to what the conversation is. I mean, you know, it's interesting because sometimes what happens is you see this building, and then all of a sudden there is this kind of final culminating moment, which is part of how I see what's happening here. So there has been for more than a year, maybe it's even been 2 years now, the Holler Back campaign, particularly in urban spaces where we've seen women pushing back against what they perceive and experience as the vulnerability associated with street harassment. So, mm-hmm. You know, not just the kind of, you know, being called baby on the street, which is irritating and annoying, but the sense in being called baby or hey, hot mama, and then if you choose not to respond or you respond by setting a boundary, then that individual immediately turning to misogynistic language, sometimes racial language, but always language that is meant to make you feel vulnerable. And so in the Holler Back campaigns, we've seen women using social media to, in fact, identify both the individuals who are doing it and the locations where it's occurring. And then, of course, now for just about a month, we have been talking about the kidnapping of and sale into slavery of the girls in Nigeria. And now this, and I think those things together give us a sense of how there is that women and girls get caught in the crossfire of wars, of angst, of male anxiety that isn't necessarily about them, but then gets wrought on their bodies.
Melissa Harris-Perry with us from Wake Forest and MSNBC, and relevant to what we're talking about, author of the book Sister Citizen, Shame, Stereotypes, and Black Women in America. And listeners, have you sent any YesAllWomen tweets or read any that you want to repeat on the air, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Is this shooting spree in Santa Barbara and revenge against women rants by the shooter beforehand about more than this individual to you? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And, Melissa, you talk about holla back. And I wonder, is this Yes All Women and even holla back, which, as you say, is a few years old, a new moment in any way? Before Twitter, there were things like Take Back the Night marches. Mm-hmm. That goes back to the 80s, at least. And here we still are.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think we could certainly go back even further. And certainly in each wave of the feminist movement in kind of Western European countries and in the U.S., each time there's a wave of it, consciousness raising is part of it. Part of it is simply having the right to speak out, because certainly part of how we know the vulnerability and I would even say a kind of terrorism that exists against girls and women that is perpetrated broadly. So it, you know, because of course the other piece of this is the not all men, but it's perpetrated broadly, and part of how it works is for women to be complicit in the experience, because women presume it to be a normal part of simply what it means to operate in public space. So each time there's kind of a wave of a feminist movement, there is this need to say, actually, this isn't normal. This is actually problematic. This is actually difficult for who we are as citizens if we have to presume that going into public space to do anything from shopping to being social to running for office means that we are opening ourselves up to, you know, vile and potentially violent behavior as a result of our gender. That is not normal. That must stop. And yet, the very fact that that happens at the turn of the 20th century, in the middle of the 20th century, you know, at the beginning of the 21st century, that we have to keep reminding ourselves that this is not normal and that these experiences nonetheless are pervasive, I think is indicative of just how difficult it is to shift the misogyny that undergirds our culture.
On Mashable.com, which is mostly a tech site, they track the rise of the hashtag Yes All Women over time, over the last few days, and where in the world, mostly U.S. and U.K., but also some Middle Eastern locations, interestingly, like Abu Dhabi and Qatar, which have recently been the focus of labor rights protests. Some of this is popping up. And listeners, if you want to follow along with some of that, on our website, we've posted an amazing visualization that I first saw on Mashable that shows the spread of the Yes All Women hashtag over this past weekend in time as well as in space. It's overlaid on a map, and you can see how it quickly spread across the world. So you can see that on our page at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Mashable aggregates some examples of Yes All Women tweets from the last 2 days, like, Yes All Women because I have a boyfriend is more likely to get a guy to back off than no, because they respect other men more than women. Somebody got that in 140 characters. Wonder Woman tweets, Yes, All Women, because in about 30 states, rapists whose victims choose to keep the baby can get parental rights, like weekend visitation, WTF, Yes, All Women. Someone else, Yes, All Women, because apparently the clothes I wear is a more valid form of consent than the words I say. And someone else, Yes, All Women, because a cool story, babe, now make me a sandwich shirt doesn't break the school dress code, a girl's bra strap does. Yes, all women. But as we're waiting for some calls to get screened and ready to go, Melissa, you mentioned the response hashtag, not all men. And let me bring that up, because that's used by some men to express support for the idea of yes, all women, certainly, but to say they feel broad brushed by it. And other, you know, feminist memes online sometimes, like, not all men support male entitlement. Certainly not all men go on misogynist shooting sprees, and they don't like the tone of men are like this, men are like that, in response to one violent, probably mentally ill hater, or even trends in society. So yeah, I guess you know about not all men. Do you have any sympathy for it?
To the extent that I have sympathy for it, it is this. That we have, I think, both in conversations around gender and in conversations around race, not always been careful about talking about patriarchy, misogyny, sexism, not men, and talking about racism, white supremacy, not white people, right? Because they truly are distinct things. Not so much because the goal here is to generate a kind of innocence, you know, kind of a baptism of innocence for some good guys, but rather because women themselves can be complicit in misogyny, in sexism, and in the kind of, you know, whether it is rape victim blaming, you know, all of the things that we're seeing with the yes, all women, they can be perpetrated by women, particularly empowered women. So I have unfortunately had to report at several points over the course of the past few months about judges who are giving just shockingly light sentences to men who have been found guilty of rape. So we're not talking here about men who have allegedly committed rape and whether or not the juries are finding them guilty based on evidence. We're talking about a court having determined that this individual is guilty of rape in both of these cases, of rape of minor women, so of girls, and the judges, in one case a man, and in one case a woman and a Democrat, who gave extraordinarily light sentences, things that you would see actually lighter even than for example, driving while under the influence of alcohol. The point being that the issue in both of those cases had to do with social and cultural assumptions about girls and how they dress and whether or not they are complicit in their own sexual assault. So I do have a sympathy for the not all men to the extent that what we care about here is patriarchy and sexism and misogyny and violence against women, which is perpetrated by some men. It is also undergirded by some women, but that more importantly has the impact of creating a kind of male privilege such that boys do not have to grow up in a world where they are constantly reminded about the need to physically protect themselves from the likelihood of assault, sexual and physical, from their intimate partners and from strangers on the street. And it changes what you feel like you are capable of doing in the world when you are raised having to constantly be aware of your vulnerability.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Melissa Harris-Perry and you at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Natalie in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm 20, and I spend a lot of time in the city, and I can't walk down a street in any of the five boroughs in my experience without being catcalled in some form. And it doesn't matter if it's 9 a.m. or 9 p.m. in Brooklyn or Manhattan. It happens all the time and has become so normal. And it's frustrating because it shouldn't be normal, and it's just not okay. It can get really scary sometimes.
Scary. It makes you feel afraid, literally afraid?
Okay, if I'm walking down the street at night and there's, like, a group of men, and then they call me, you know, oh, hey, beautiful, hey, sexy, like, what's up? And I'm just, like, walking past them. That gets scary because it's just me, and then there's these people who are, like, you know, looking down at me.
Melissa, want to talk to Natalie?
Hi. So this is such a challenge because I think the experience is one that feels almost universal. It certainly cannot possibly be universal. No human experience entirely is. But it certainly is one that is very broad-based. I guess the one thing I would say is when I first heard you say, when I come into the city, and I do, you know, certainly the kind of catcalling on the street is in part an urban phenomenon just because we're walking when we're in cities in ways that we're not in suburban spaces, and because there are just more humans, more people around. But I guess, you know, for me, particularly as a black feminist, I'm always standing on this line of anxiety between wanting to absolutely confirm and say that's right, that is not acceptable, you should not have to experience that. It can be quite scary, particularly as you suggest there, if you are alone and there is a group of men. I also worry, however, and this has been part of the challenge around Holler Back, that when you look at that map, that sometimes the map looks like communities that are being rapidly gentrified or integrated in ways that suggest there are also class and race-based aspects to it. And so this is part of our challenge whenever we're trying to do feminist work.
Anything else you want to add, Natalie?
Nope. That's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And Brian, I would just add, I think, you know, even as the information about this case goes forward, that issue of the intersectionality is going to emerge because we know that police officers went to this shooter's home. We know that they spoke with him. We know that the parents sounded the alarm, so much so that they were on their way to Santa Barbara, you know, to the college town when this happened. And my bet is that his capacity to self-present with a certain class and race capacity keeps him from appearing suspicious to police officers. And so part of what happened...
He was a relatively upscale white man.
Yes, and young and good-looking and, you know, spoke well and was educated. You know, all of the signals of, oh, this person couldn't possibly be criminal. And so these young men and women who die at his hand are in part victimized, again, by our cultural understandings that fail to see certain kinds of people as perpetrators and fail to understand how victimizing other kinds of experiences are. And so, I mean, this is part of why it matters, not because every man is a mass murderer, but because all of us become vulnerable when our biases make it impossible for us to see the actual potential murderer standing in front of us.
And as we talk about the shooting rampage in Santa Barbara the other day, the misogynist rants that preceded it online and writing and on YouTube, and the Yes All Women hashtag that has sprung up in the U.S. and spread globally in the last few days. Jamie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Jamie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
So this hashtag really has struck a nerve with myself and almost every woman that I know and have talked to about it, because it is such an underlining part of our day-to-day experience. I walk just down the block, one block from my apartment, no matter what I'm wearing, no matter if I walk on that side of the street, no matter what, people say things to me, they catcall. And it's one of those things that I don't say responses because I don't want to escalate it. They're out there every single day, so I don't want it to be uncomfortable or to put myself at risk or kind of have more of a target on myself than I already feel that I have just being a woman, just walking. And one of the other tweets that I really strongly connected with is this idea that if that's the only level of harassment that we experience day to day, that we're somehow lucky, mm-hmm. that's an acceptable amount, and that I should, for some reason or another, feel lucky that more hasn't happened to me.
Yep.
And I also wanted to respond with the Not All Men hashtag. There have been some really empathetic, open male responses that I've seen on Twitter. And I've also seen the opposite, which is just continuing to downplay the role that this has in our day-to-day lives and our overall feeling of safety within our own homes and our own neighborhoods. And the Not All Men hashtag, I agree with the other callers that, in general, yes, we absolutely agree, it's not all men. But rather than having a, quote, Not All Men hashtag, why not have a male ally hashtag? Why not have a hashtag that shows support and listening and really being open to understanding what the people in your life experience day to day and the fact that we don't feel safe no matter where we live?
So hashtag, I think you mentioned to our screener, like hashtag male allies.
Yeah.
Does that exist? Like, does that exist, or did you make that up?
I think I just made that up. I haven't seen it, and I wish that I had, because it brings up this idea of, you know, women versus men, and feminism is just for women, and that's not true at all.
So start it. Go tweet it right now. Or our listeners, anybody else out there, any guys out there want to start this meme with hashtag male allies in response to Jamie? Let's see if we can make that go global. So
that
there it is.
That would be fantastic.
Hashtag male allies, moment one. Let's see where it goes.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Jamie, thank you very much. Melissa Harris-Perry, do we do, as the media, a disservice at all by talking about this so much in response to something like this rampage? The killer's YouTube video has been taken down, I understand, but his written 147-page manifesto is out there, and we're all talking about the larger issue in response to him. I've chosen not to use his name in my framing of the segment today. It sounds to me like you've also been avoiding his name in this conversation, so he doesn't get inadvertently glorified even as he's being vilified. But that's a small thing. Does this all fuel the fire in any way? Is it necessarily good to have a massive media response?
I do think it's good to have a massive media response, but I also think that it has to be done in a way that is as responsible as we can be. So I think I would have answered that differently before hosting a television show for 2 years, in part because now on the other side of the camera, I have a much stronger sense of how difficult it is to, particularly in a media environment that is commercially driven, that is driven, in fact, by ratings and profits and all of those sorts of things, to have in-depth, complicated conversations about things like sexual assault, prison, even the environment. Like, there are some issues that I see as being the most important issues and that I even hear from people as critically important issues, but the very simple commercial realities are that on a Saturday morning when I host my show, that people don't want to hear about sexual assault. Mm-hmm. We'll often turn the TV off when mm-hmm. we have that conversation.
Right.
But because this is a capturing moment, because people are hungry for this story, whether that's a good or bad thing, you know, it's a salacious kind of story, if you can use that as the opportunity to say, all right, now we are going to talk about this, it can create an audience much broader than you might normally have, than the folks who would normally stay for that talk, who are often the choir to whom you are preaching. So suddenly you get a new audience and you have a new opportunity. In that, I think it is important and it is worthy. But again, we did not, for example, play the shooter's video on our show. We made a decision not to show the video, although we did show a still image of him. And I do think it is important for all of us to remember that part of what this individual was interested in was some level of attention, notoriety, and that even granting it after his death is troubling for me. But I also believe pretty strongly after talking with mental health experts that the likelihood of a copycat crime occurring solely as a response to media is pretty low because there are such complicated sets of factors that go into someone making a decision to behave in this way. Whereas the kinds of behaviors that we hear talked about on the Yes All Women hashtag, it doesn't take a complicated, it just takes being alive in these right. nations and that sense of male privilege to cause those. So let's use this as an opportunity to talk about that.
Steve on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hello, Steve.
Hi. Of course it's not all men, but it is all women. And that means that it is most men, or at least many too many men. And we must take responsibility as a society, as a whole. And if we get defensive and hide behind personal innocence, then in a sense, I believe we are a silent conspirator. We're part of the problem.
So go start our male allies hashtag.
I want to that point seems so important, that silence in the face of injustice, that silence in the face of violence is, it does make one a conspirator, whether one is male or female. Silence in the face of this kind of misogyny is conspiratorial with it.
Steve, thank you very much. And we're almost out of time, but I'm curious, after 2+ years now of doing your show on MSNBC, just before you go, I'm curious about your own sense of where your audience is right now. Any topics recently breaking out as getting the most audience response over a sustained period of time, not just in response to what's hot that week, and indicating something about people's experiences or what they're feeling passionately about? And maybe your audience is a reflection of your passions because that's who comes and watches you. But anything that you're picking up from the audience that's coming back at you that makes you think, oh, I'm learning from doing this TV thing, that people are really feeling strongly about something?
You know, it's so interesting you ask that, in part because I don't read ratings and I don't allow anyone on my team to tell me about ratings. But the fact is, some of my producers can't help but to tell me about them, only because when I'll pitch certain kinds of ideas, there's this little shadow that falls over their eyes of sadness. Because, you know, and when I always know, that means, oh, that didn't rate. Look, during moments when we can capture the audience, I am consistently pleased by the kinds of things that are valuable to the folks who watch us. And probably the best example I have of this is what happened with Bring Back Our Girls. We were not by any means the first, but among...
About the girls in Nigeria?
The girls in Nigeria. We were among one of the first shows to talk about it on television. And then I watched, again, only among them, but I watched how important that story was, how much viewer response we got, and, of course, how much the story grew overall. Now, I don't know that I'm happy about armed U.S. personnel in Chad, but it is so important that we are talking about Boko Haram and about violence against women on the African continent as part of the broader sets of violent activities and humanitarian crises that the continent is facing. So, you know, that's been an important one. I have also had enormous response whenever we have talked about issues of LGBT rights. I have a really amazing audience who will send in emails and say, you know, I haven't thought about that before. You know, this is important. And really feeling like we're making some headway in talking about LGBT issues that move beyond marriage. So certainly marriage, but also beyond marriage.
Melissa Harris-Perry, moving right now from Tulane University, where she's been, to Wake Forest in the fall, right?
Yes, that's my alma mater. So 20 years after graduating,
oh, wow.
I get to go home. It's kind of great.
How about that? And author of Sister Citizen, Shame, Stereotypes, and Black Women in America, and host of her weekend morning shows on MSNBC. Thank you so much for having this conversation with us.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the new New York City Sanitation Commissioner, Catherine Garcia. Is there a progressive de Blasio way to take out the garbage? Brian Lehrer on WNYC.